listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michael Sterling.
And I am not, but oh, how I wish I was, Michael.
You are listening to State of the Arts, indeed.
Yes, yes, you are. And we'd like to thank our presenting sponsor, Breakdown Services. Breakdown Services is the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Service, the magic that is Breakdown Services, visit www.breakdownexpress.com.
That would be right, Paul. And our thanks also goes out to PerformingArtsLive.com for their ongoing support of our live arts calendar. PerformingArtsLive.com is the most comprehensive such listing service in Southern California, enabling you to search events by date, category, and region.
And today could be called Walton's Monday, but being associated with that iconic television show barely scratches the surface of what our in-studio guests have accomplished since. Joining us today, a performer since the age of 7, her work has encompassed performing, directing, and co-artistic direction for 2 renowned theaters in Canada, where she collaborated as a writer-director on more than 40 shows, and wait until you hear about the skydiving. Please welcome Judy Norton. Judy's with us. Hi, Judy.
Hello.
Hello,
how are
Judy.
You? Do you like how technically advanced we are with that? We have all this stuff.
Yeah.
Didn't know all these people were here, did you?
I did not. Let's hope they laugh at appropriate times, too.
And also joining us, a woman who has recently completed a poignant memoir about her time playing the Waltons' daughter, Erin, a fascinating chronicle of growing up in front of America, not to mention her trials and triumphs since. Actress, author, and activist Mary McDonough is in studio with us today. Paul, welcome, Mary.
Thank you.
Hey, how are you?
I'm holding for applause.
Well, keep holding, because I could. I have all sorts of them, too.
Excellent.
I mean, we have different ones over the course of the hour.
You know, so
just depends on how
depends on what happens. Yes, exactly.
I must tell everybody, Paul, that we had scheduled originally today another member of the Waltons, Miss Michael Learned.
Right.
Who unfortunately had a professional conflict come up this afternoon, and she's just opened over the weekend in a beautiful play, we understand, called Southern Comforts down
yes.
in Long Beach. So hopefully she'll be rebooked and joining us in the near future.
Yes, very much so. We'd love to have her.
So, Paul, how
we couldn't have all of them here at one time?
Couldn't do that.
No.
We wouldn't fit.
No? No, you're probably not. There's
no, you wouldn't get a chance to say anything. Yeah. We're loud and we talk a lot.
Are you?
So, Paul, how was your week? Whether with, you know...
You mean aside from the fact that yesterday I had to find 2 of every species and put them on an ark?
Yeah.
Aside from that,
it was
everything
nasty,
was okay.
Huh?
Yes. I did have a strange experience this week, though.
You did?
I've got to tell you. Yeah, it was a little odd. And I don't know if either of the ladies who are with us today have tried this particular item, but I tried boba for the first time. You ever had boba, the boba tea?
Okay, we have looks coming from the ladies now.
I can't believe you've never tried it before.
I can't either. I can't either. But let me say, after having tasted it, I'm not really too pissed I pushed it off this long.
Because I have one question. Did it get stuck in the straw?
No, because I was at this place that had this giant, you know, they have a straw that's like, you know, the size of a cigar holder, you know, which is also just a little odd if you're not used to it.
I think what you should do is explain what this is first. Mm. So,
well,
I don't really know.
I think what boba is that someone had tea and said, you know, this tea is good. But what would really make it is if we put fruit-flavored eyeballs in it. and
Lord.
You know, it's like Clamato, that whole thing with Clamato. Mm. I mean, who drank tomato juice and said, you know, it's good, but it needs fish? You know, I don't... So that's what I'm saying. So that's it. But what I don't know who arrived at boba. And I can eat anything, Mike. I told you, I've gone to sushi bars. I've eaten live shrimp. It doesn't faze me.
Oh, my God.
But boba is just was so unusual. It's not even the flavor. It's just a consistency.
It's weird. The texture.
Yeah.
I think it's really the kid audience because my son likes it and thinks it's fun. So I think that's their target audience.
So he thinks it's cool.
Okay. Is someone saying I'm not kid-like? I think that's what I'm getting. Am I not
kid-like?
Eating
eyeballs is cool.
What?
Eating eyeballs is
called. That's true. That's gummy worms.
Yep.
There
my
you go.
Question, though,
what's that?
Paul and ladies, is there something beneficial, a health benefit to this at all? Is it
not
like green tea?
I mean, it's tapioca,
so.
Isn't it?
It's tapioca.
It's
yeah.
tapioca. And someone said, we don't want to stop at pudding. Let's just put it in a beverage. I don't know. And I think boba is probably onomatopoetic, too. I think they named it after the sound, the first sound someone made. Here, try some of my tea. Boba.
that would make sense.
That they arrived at the name was just the repugnant sound that came up. But anyway, no, not and nothing against the boba people. Don't send letters. Don't send letters. But it gives you an idea how exciting my week was, Michael, that I could take 5 minutes to talk about boba.
Yeah, well.
How was your week?
It was busy, of course. A great weekend at the nightclub, at the supper club.
What club would that be again, Michael?
That would be Sterling's upstairs at Vitello's.
Oh, right.
Yeah, in Studio City.
In beautiful Tujunga Village.
That's right.
Yes.
And where the lovely Judy Norton headlined for us last
year. That's right. That's right.
And did Mary show up? No.
No.
Oh, they're going to duke it out here.
In the house.
Meow.
She has a book signing come up.
And Judy is coming to that.
That would be the book.
Good sister.
Is that the book soup thing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I get $16 every time I say book soup during this broadcast. Did you know that?
No,
did
I
she
did
offer
not.
You the same deal in the
no,
lobby?
No, they did not.
$16 American. Book no, soup, I book get, soup, book soup.
I get.
Because it's April 16th.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Okay. See, that's subliminal.
There
that's
you go.
I'm sorry I interrupted
no,
you.
Michael, not at all.
Talking, as
no,
I
no,
want
no.
to do.
It was a touch and go there for a while because the venue had its challenges with some brownouts in the area there, but it did not affect the show. So that was a good thing.
Well, that's good. Yeah. No,
and,
it was really bad.
Yeah. We still did incredible business considering the fact that the rain was so prohibitive of people leaving their houses or wanting to, I should say.
Well, clearly they all had canoes and rafts. And
I know.
Yeah.
It's just like every one day a year, God gets pissed at Los Angeles and just goes, you know, you have such great weather all year. Let's wait until the day of the Los Angeles Marathon to dump more water on this place than we usually get in a season. So it was really unfortunate. And ironically, first day of spring, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Enough about the weather in L.A. Let's talk to our first guest.
Indeed. Our first guest, ladies and gentlemen, is best known for her role as Mary Ellen on the CBS family drama series The Waltons. A diverse performer, her talents have taken her from stage to screen, from drama to comedy to musical theater to the recording studio. She has worked in front of the camera as well as behind the scenes as a writer and director, as a singer. She has delighted audiences from North America to Europe, Iceland to Malaysia. Please welcome Judy Norton.
I don't have a Walton soundbite. That's the best I could do. That was tremendously hee-haw, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
I apologize for that. That's all I had.
Judy, Judy, Judy.
Yes.
I was dying to say that, right? In that Cary Grant kind of way. I hope they got it.
Well, is that what that was?
That's didn't it sound Judy, Judy,
okay,
Judy.
No,
didn't
I,
that, yeah?
No, I think
yeah,
it sounded like Steve Buscemi to me, but
I mean, I don't do impressions. I'm just kind of.
It was Steve Buscemi doing Cary Grant.
That's what it was.
Yes.
Which is a far more difficult impersonation.
Yes.
Judy was so kind to come in and take the place of Michael Learned today, and we're thrilled that you did. And I haven't seen you for a few months. You were in the nightclub recently.
Yeah.
Not too long ago.
And I have to say, I mean, just for your listening audience, that I had a wonderful time performing at Sterling's and working the supper club. It was a lovely evening. It's a great venue to work at, and also to go and see my friends perform at. So I'm very glad that it's continuing to do well, because I will come back one of these days.
Thank you. And you know who was there among your friends last night was Eduardo, Enriquez, and Bonnie, and Maura Hanlon-Smith.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yes, Maura was actually a little cameo in last night's show.
Uh-huh.
It is a great room, though. The vibe is very nice. It's very New York supper club.
Paul has headlined there. He has headlined there for a month.
I do, yeah. I have 10 bar there.
No. He actually did with his one-man show. The
with the one-man
wonderful show,
yes.
Called Straight Up with a Twist.
Straight Up with a Twist, yes.
Cool.
And
yeah,
a tagline that I love to say.
The world's a cruel place when you're a straight guy with good taste and a great eye for color.
There you go.
Yes. Predates the whole metrosexual thing. So, Judy, I have to ask you about one of the great things about doing this show, meeting ladies like yourselves and all the people that we have met, which we've been very blessed with. Reading the promotional material, the other things that people have done that maybe we're not so familiar with, I got to ask you about the skydiving.
The two world records?
The two world records for skydiving. Please do tell. That's fascinating.
The two world records were two of the largest formations ever built. One was all women. One was a combined men and women's record. I originally started skydiving for Circus of the Stars. And I was asked to do a stunt for them that involved wing walking and skydiving. So they trained me for that. And by the time I finished the training, I was sort of hooked. And I spent about 10 years jumping out of, as some people say, perfectly good airplanes. But if you saw these airplanes, you would jump out of them too. I wouldn't get in one of these without a parachute on. So it just was a hobby of mine for some time. And I had an opportunity to participate in a couple of these records. And there you go.
And you're obviously still very athletic. And was it Howard Cosell actually said something about you when the Battle of the Network Stars gave you some praise from your performances there?
I think you said something like I was the best female celebrity who ever competed. You know, I was floored when I heard that. Yeah, I know. I know. I did three of those. And, you know, our teams did very well. And so
Judy was really good.
Yeah, I was so into that show. I used to love to watch it because it was really before then. You think about when that show was on, there was no real glimpse of it. It wasn't like television today. It wasn't like there were reality shows and all of the Hollywood
Entertainment Tonight type shows.
You never got to see anyone who performed on a television show outside of that show, and it was that to me was the most fascinating. Not even the physicality or anything like that, but just like, oh, look, that's what they talk like when they're just walking around. And I really dug that. Did you like those shows?
I did indeed. And, you know, I'm just looking at our promotional material. She also skis and plays tennis, and so you are really very athletic. Do you keep that up?
I have been over the years. One of the only things I'm doing on a regular basis is I still jump horses. Mm-hmm. So on their back as opposed to over them. So that's my, after I had my son, you know, it ate up a lot of my time and a lot of traveling and stuff as well. So not so many sports as I used to be involved in, but still like to get out there and do things.
Now, the other thing that I stumbled across here, which I find very interesting, being the executive director of a theater company here in town, that you were a co-artistic director for two theaters in Canada. How did that come about? Is that something that you, how long were you up there? What brought you up there?
I was in Canada.
Because you're from here originally,
right?
Yeah,
but my father's Canadian.
Okay.
So I was working up there as a performer and met a man, and we ended up getting married, and he was this is the father of my son, not my current husband, but my former husband, and he was working for this theater company as a director, and their current artistic team left to start another theater company, and so the producer was left with no writers or directors or anything, so we put together a proposal to do their writing and directing, and it was accepted, and so I spent 8 years with that company writing all these original shows and directing, and then after I left that theater company, I continued and stayed in Canada and did a lot of film and television up there for another couple of years, and then came back to the States.
Mm-hmm. That's an amazing schedule, though. I mean, that's 40 shows in that time.
Yeah, it was 5 original shows a year that we put up.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's just staggering.
Yeah.
We managed to do one
a week.
One a year.
Oh, one a year.
Sea
your
glass.
Company.
Yeah,
yes,
Sea Glass is once a year, but you know, it's just that's...
No, but you put a lot of effort into that.
No, we do, but you know, something as prolific as that really impresses me, because I know how difficult.
You know, James Denton sits on the board of Paul's group and is an amazing
Jamie Denton,
support.
He's on Desperate Housewives. He's Mike
amazing
the plumber.
Support.
We often get
Sea
mistaken
Theater.
For each other, you know, being at the same meetings.
I would imagine you do,
absolutely.
Paul.
It's the cross I bear, you know.
Judy, you've been singing, speaking of singing, since you were 7 years old.
Yes, but not well. Yes, at 7 years
old. I'm sorry, would you please say that again, Judy? Would you please
but
say
not well? Yeah, I know. I think I was at about 16 when I made the mistake. Maybe it wasn't a mistake, but I actually recorded myself one day. And I have to tell you that even to my ears, what came back on that tape had no similarity to what I was hearing in my head. And I was horrified, and I promptly put myself in front of a voice teacher and said, I really want to do this. And I'm, you know, no ear, no pitch, no, I mean, it was just like, I am proof that if you work hard enough, you can learn to sing in tune. Yes.
Really? That's fascinating to me. Yeah. So you were really just that, like, nails on the chalkboard?
I had very little, you know, like, some people just had God-given talent, and, you know, that wasn't me. I mean, I guess the potential was there, but I didn't have a good ear. My pitch was bad. My tone was, you know, sometimes it was okay, sometimes it wasn't. But I just so loved to sing that I was willing to put in hour after hour after hour of, you know, of just practice and, you know, working on
things. Well, that's particularly interesting because you're such a fine singer today that to cite those kinds of problems as a child is kind of unusual that you would, you know, be able to sing like you do today and star in all of the musicals that you've starred in.
Yeah, I mean, it was really just sheer determination because I wanted to do it. And my mother had been a singer professionally, and she, you know, like took 5 minutes of lessons, and she was, you know, great, you know, so it was a little frustrating, but, you know, and then there was like also all the people who said, well, you know, this is the kind of singer you are, and you'll never sing this, and you'll never sing that, and you don't have this range, and, you know, and I just would kind of like just inside go, you know, and I just go, and I wouldn't sing it in front of them, but I'd just go home and I'd sing things that I couldn't sing yet, but it was like, someday I'm going to be able to sing this. And
I always love that tactic when dealing with young creative people, too. Okay, here's the things you can't do.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, you really have to go, you know, the whole, find the one thing you're good at and do that. Worst advice you could give a person ever. Find the one thing you're good at and stick with that. Yeah, really limit yourself from a very, very young age as a performer, you know.
Mary, do you share that talent? Do you sing? I know you do theater.
In the shower, and I'm very, very good at it. In the shower and in my car alone, usually with Pat Benatar singing with me. I'm great. I love to sing. I don't sing as well as Judy does, but I don't have a natural talent to it, although I have done musicals.
Well, you know, at least you had the courage to do them, right? And hopefully, obviously, you must have done them well, or they wouldn't have had you back, right?
Yeah.
But it's so hard to get that shower rigged up on stage. The basin of water, you know, not to mention the car.
And not very Walton-like, you know, being in the shower, so.
But, you know, half of singing, as we know, really, seriously, is how good of an actress
you are,
how good of an actor you are, and both of you clearly have that going for you, so.
Thank you.
You know, it's got to be. Got to be good.
Yeah.
You should think about maybe doing it at Sterling sometime.
Oh.
There you go. There's an idea.
I'll just watch Judy the next time.
You know,
maybe you can cameo next time as like just a little toe in the water.
Well, you know, we do have a Walton's Christmas CD.
I know that.
That came out.
I know that.
That's available on Book Soup, isn't it? I'm sorry.
Only April 16th.
Only April 16th.
And Judy is also, Paul, one of Los Angeles's most notable directors. She's done some amazing things here in Los Angeles. Something that I saw that she had done, which is kind of the prelude to our meeting, actually, was a production of Cabaret for Musical Theater of Los Angeles.
Was that MTLA's production?
Exactly.
Yes.
Which was brilliant. Just brilliant.
Thank you.
Indeed. And are you going to continue to work with them?
I am. They are... they're building a whole training academy at the moment and getting their sort of plans in place. So, but Bonnie McMahon, the founder of the company, and I speak frequently and are very close friends. So, you know, I'm usually, when something's happening, she'll, you know, come and talk to me about it. So I look forward to what we get to collaborate on next. But let me fill you in a little bit on what may not be on my little paperwork.
Please
there,
do.
Since I was a last-minute replacement.
Please do.
We were talking musical theater. I'm going to be going out later this year to do another production of Hello, Dolly! Down in Texas. And that'll be... I usually try and post all this stuff on my website for people who want to kind of follow. And they can subscribe, and then they'll get messages when things are happening.
And what would that website be?
That would be judynorton.com. Isn't that original?
Oh, I was going to... Don't lose us in the specifics.
You'd never find it.
JudyNorton.com, not .org, .com.
Yeah, and the other thing is that should be out any day now on online. The season 2 premiere of a web series out of Canada... that I went up to shoot called Poker Girls.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice title.
Where I played a judge. Of course, that has a lot to do with poker. But I won.
Mm-hmm.
I won the big hand. Anyway, but I wouldn't want to give away too much. Anyway, so that the season 2 premiere, I believe, should be coming up online anytime. So
okay, and you'll obviously
a reality show?
Have a link to that?
No, it's not a reality show. It's a kind of a drama, an edgy sort of drama comedy series filmed out of Calgary. And
now, so you're a judge that is also a proficient poker player.
I don't think I'm a professional. I don't know. I don't know that much about.
No, I said proficient.
Proficient, like yes. Good at evidently, poker. Up against the girls I was playing with, I was proficient.
Was proficient right? Is that how I use the right word?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay. So, and that's something they. I probably will be going back up to do some more episodes for them. So people can keep an eye on that.
It's astounding just in the past year. I mean, you watch webisodes now, which, you know, they used to. Now you see them, and you could be watching it on TNT, you'd be watching it on NBC. That it's just like, and especially now too, where people are going so much more to the web for their entertainment, much like this show that you're listening to right now. That I have like a half a dozen friends who are just like, no, don't have cable anymore. Just get everything on the TV, everything on the computer, and get it all comes into the house that way. So be looking for that. JudyNorton.com.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'll be there.
Okay. Will you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, should we do an arts calendar?
I think so.
All right. Would you like me to? We'll pay the bills with that, and then you have a couple of reviews for us,
couple.
And then we'll talk to Mary, but we'll talk to Judy as well. Our live arts calendar featuring Chicago Theater veterans Kevin Tice, Jack Hickey, and Mary Michelle. Brian Friel's lyrical, riveting, and haunting work Faith Healer is a masterpiece of storytelling, interlacing three lives and examining ancient questions of faith and truth. Frank, Grace, and Teddy are bound together, and yet each confesses his own reality of the struggles and events they share. This haunting and provocative play entices the audience to become the fourth character and to tease out the answers. Directed by Belinda Bremer, who also helmed Oak Park Festival Theater's critically acclaimed productions of Dancing at Lunasa and the Jeff recommended Of Mice and Men. Faith Healer is playing at the Madison Street Theater in Oak Park, Illinois through April 16th. By the way, Michael, Oak Park Festival Theater is going to be featured in our regional spotlight in the next couple of weeks.
Oh, terrific.
And this production of Faith Healer just got a rave in today's Chicago Tribune. So for all of our listeners in the Chicago area, be sure to check out Faith Healer.
Awesome. Layers of Love, a one-night-only fundraiser, will be presented on Wednesday, March 23rd at 7 p.m. at M Bar, 1253 Vine Street in Hollywood. Layers of Love is a charity whose mission is to provide children who are afflicted with AIDS, HIV, with a very special birthday celebration. Serving children that have, through no fault of their own, found themselves in poverty, without family members in their lives, victims of abuse in many forms or other life and other, I should say, life challenges because of being afflicted with HIV/AIDS. The star-studded lineup will include our dear friend Eileen Graff and our friend David Burnham, Jennifer Hubia. Do you think I'm saying that right, Paul?
I don't know, Michael.
HUBIA. What do you think, ladies?
You got it.
I was saying something like that. Jennifer Hubia Quinn and Joe Donahoe. Among others, tickets are available by calling 323 area code 856-0036. Once again, that's 323-856-0036.
And for more information about events in our arts calendar, you can visit either stateoftheartsla.com, stateoftheartsla.com, or performingartslive.com, where you can also check out what's happening in Southern California every day of the week. And Michael, that organization you spoke of sounds great, so we will definitely put out that contact information before the end of the hour today so people can listen in, or rather attend that. And now you saw a couple of productions, didn't you, this week?
I did. There were interesting parallels to them. I went to the beautiful NoHo Arts Center. If you've not been there, you should go. This is a production that is new, called Having It All. And it is on stage now through April 24th. And then basically, this is a David Elzer production. David is one of the great producers in town, young producers in town, that brought us The Marvelous Wonderettes and Life Could Be a Dream, both of them running for...
I was going to say, if only you could have a couple of successes.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Wonderettes ran for over 2 years here, and Life Could Be a Dream at the Hudson ran for about a year and a half. Wonderful shows. And Having It All, instead of longing for what we don't have and appreciating what we've got and being truthful, you know, with ourselves and the world that revolves around us, while making the effort to understand others in the world in which they live in, for better or for worse, is the common thread in this. And it is a fascinating and often spellbinding musical about five women who meet one another at an airport en route to trips of varying yet very similar emotional destinations. The real destination that they're all going to is the city of Los Angeles. Superbly directed by Richard Israel and performed by really an extraordinary and engaging cast of ladies, including Shannon Wayne, Jennifer Lee Warren, Lindsay Alley, Kim Huber, and Alette Taylor. It is a 90-minute, one-act, and it is set in the JFK International Airport, where these women, as I said, are waiting to board their flight to Los Angeles. So from the opening number of this score, which is called In Her Shoes This Time, which lyrically introduces each woman's character and the comedic sizing up of one of the other, to the progressively riveting score's final number, Where Am I Today? It exemplifies the real journey here, and that is indeed having it all. And I'm not going to, I don't want to say too much about the storyline here, because, I mean, you've got the characters are, one is a happy but very unfulfilled housewife. Another is a very high-powered career woman. The other is a frustrated writer who has got a deadline, you know, facing her that she can't seem to make. And another is a wide-eyed, you know, school teacher. And the other is an over-zenned yoga instructor.
Over-zenned.
Yes, that was that's my word.
I was going to say, I'm writing that shit down.
Yeah. And,
over-zenned.
Over-zenned. With, minus the S word, Paul.
Oh, jeez. I don't. I said the F word one day on the show, and I thought Michael was going to
apoplectic. Didn't really say it,
I didn't say it, but no. it was around holiday time, and I let the F word slip, and Michael goes, on Christmas. I'm sorry I interrupted you,
Not
Michael, but
at
it sounds
all.
It sounds it. The fact that it's a 90-minute musical just tells you right there that it crackles. Because if I have any problem with musicals, is that they go on about four songs too many than most of them for me. Because I like, you know, fast-moving stuff. But the premise is great. Just five women together at in an airport. I mean,
and
just
you know what's really truly interesting about this is that the way that Richard Israel has directed this, and it's just one set. But the theater's beautiful. The set's beautiful. And as you're sitting there before the show starts, you suddenly hear the sound of airport sounds. So you're hearing planes coming in and going out very subtly, and then it kind of gradually, as it gets closer to showtime, it becomes a little more prominent. And
and then you realize it's just because you're a no-ho, and that's sort of a given.
Exactly. But once this musical begins, the women themselves actually, because the set is stationary, they actually become almost set pieces in another kind of way. The use of them and the locations in which they suddenly appear in on this set, which Richard has been so clever about, you know, mixing that up. Because otherwise it would get pretty staged, you know, five people on the same set for 90 minutes. But man, it works, and I urge anybody listening to this to treat yourself. Especially women will enjoy it, but it's certainly something that we've all experienced this in our own ways. So taking your man with you, or your boyfriend, or your significant other, whomever, will get a great flight out of seeing Having It All at NoHo Art Center now through April 24th.
Okay,
indeed.
All right.
And then, shall I?
Yeah, please. I mean, if you can. I want to get to our next guest. I want to get to Mary shortly, but go right ahead.
Absolutely. I'll be brief on this. Glory Days, which is just open, being another new musical, similar, parallel, but this time it's about four young men who are indeed in their the transfer from boyhood to, not boyhood really, but young manhood into adulthood.
Do you see any plays that have both men and women in them at the same time?
Well, this weekend I did. at least they were in the audience.
Yeah.
So this is, I must say, it's very simple, it's honest, and it's very moving, and I really can't compare it to too many other things exactly like this in the genre of this. Four young men, what they do basically is they're college boys now, they go back to their high school, they relive those moments when, for them, this is their glory day, because when they were in high school, they were unpopular and used to be made fun of and all of those things. So it was kind of their get back, or they thought it was going to be their get back. And what it actually turned out to be, of course, was their own self-discovery of who they've become. And it has a terrific score, and the cast is loaded with talent, I might add. These four young men by the names of Alex Robert Holmes, Derek Klena, Matthew Kohler, Ian Littleworth, Jeffrey Scott Parsons, and Alex Martinez, who are understudies, the last two for the principal four. Music is interesting, and you just kind of hang on by the seat of your pants with this one. And the harmony, the sound system, the Lillian Theater at the Elephant Complex there is where this takes place. And it is on
stage. Oh, at the Asylum, the Elephant Asylum?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yes.
And it is currently, it just opened on Saturday evening, March 19th. It's currently also on stage through Sunday, April 24th. And to get tickets to this wonderful show, you can do that through brownpapertickets.com or by calling 323-960-7792. Once again, brownpapertickets.com or 323-960-7792. You've got winners in both shows. Make it a point. Get out to the theater.
And that show was directed by Calvin
Remsberg, who directed your show.
Directed my show at Sterling's and is my vocal coach.
Oh, great.
And, you know, I must say very quickly about this, Calvin Remsberg. This was a show that was a very, very big hit in Washington, D.C., Paul. I played there for quite a while, and then that predicated it moving to New York, off-Broadway. In New York, however, it was closed, opened and closed in one night.
Yes. Yeah, I know.
And Calvin dug into that research, and he thought, what? How could something be so good in one city and not another? And a sophisticated city, right, like Washington, D.C., and he found all the reasons why, and in his opinion, retooled it, brought it to what it is today, and it's clearly something to see. Yeah.
Well, thank you for seeing two shows, and because I didn't see any, so thank you for supporting the review.
I covered you.
Most recently seen in her recurring role on The New Adventures of Old Christine, Book Soup. Our next guest spent her childhood in front of the cameras, Book Soup, later becoming an award-winning writer, producer, and director, as well as an outspoken activist for various causes, Book Soup. Her journey is indeed a fascinating one, as chronicled in her upcoming memoir, Lessons from the Mountain, What I Learned from Aaron Walton. Please welcome in studio Mary McDonough.
I love that.
How are you?
I'm great.
Don't you wish they could just follow us around like that?
I think I'm taking it with me.
Yeah. We not only give good intro, we give good audience.
We try to. Oh. We try to. It's all digital, but we try to. So now, the book, The Lessons from the Mountain, What I Learned from Aaron Walton, that is soon to be released, or has, oh no, just March 29th.
29th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. So
days away.
Days away. So can you, without precluding anyone from purchasing the book, can you give us sort of an overall on it of what share it with the listeners?
Yeah, well, it's really about my lessons of growing up on the Waltons and having two families. It sort of starts out with me with my, you know, growing up a Valley girl and having my McDonough family and then being plucked up out of that family and plopped into Hollywood, into the Walton family. And it talks about, you know, behind-the-scenes antics, wonderful stories, fun times that we had, lots of dinner table scenes, Judy Gold test. And it goes through some of the, you know, the wonderful experiences, but also my confusion in growing up in those two worlds. And
you were 10, right?
I was 10. And then, you know, trying to find, you know, Mary Ellen was the cool, hip, smart tomboy. Aaron was the pretty one. It was like, you know, so I started to take that on and trying to be perfect, and I got confused along the way, and it goes through some bad choices that I made, and then ultimately coming out the other side and becoming an activist for women's health issues in Washington, D.C., and testifying before the FDA, and like you said, you know, everybody always says, oh, only do one thing, you know,
yeah.
And everybody kept saying to me, write the book about one thing, have it be just about lupus or just about the Waltons. But my life is a mosaic. I'm a filmmaker, I'm an actor, I'm a mom, and you know, now an author. So it is the big mosaic of my life, and it's kind of all in there.
As you know, as most people's is, I mean, the nature of you want to make it interesting, but you also want to share, you know, not only the stories, especially when you get to something like a performer's autobiography. You know, I love autobiographies, and it's one of my favorite things to read. But when they stop just at what the person is primarily known for, you know, it's very it doesn't make for interesting reading. You know, when you stick just with that, it's like, well, I watched the show. I got that aspect of things. Mm-hmm. This is a book. Give me a little more than that. So
it goes beyond the show.
Oh, no. And I'm very excited to.
That's why she hasn't let any of us read it yet.
Real? Is it one of those? Is it going to be
like
the Keith Richards
guess
thing?
I'll find out.
Yeah. Yeah.
At Book Soup.
Where was that? I'm sorry.
Book Soup. I think I'm supposed to be there. It's
you
what
will
April
be there.
16th, uh-huh. I think she said.
Yeah.
I think it's on my calendar.
Great. Yeah, there'll be
well,
other family.
Well, actually,
there too.
You don't need to worry about that because apparently she spray painted it on the wall in here.
And my car window.
Yeah, well, you know, it's family. You just
got to
be there for them.
But, so, I'm sorry, go ahead,
Mike. No, I was just going to say, but so what I find interesting is that all of these health issues, which were ultimately diagnosed as lupus, which mm-hmm. you just said, right? And they started over this period of years, right? 10 years or mm-hmm. so. And it never, you must have been being treated by doctors when you were having these
many doctors
and no one ever recognized that they were symptoms of this or
no I mean I went to a dermatologist for the rashes mm-hmm. I went to an endocrinologist for blood work and you're going to your MD for joint stiffness and pain and finally I ended up at a rheumatologist and had a lupus panel and sure enough it came back positive.
Wow.
But 10 years and rounds of doctors and kind of not knowing what was wrong. And the thing about lupus is you don't look sick. So people say, well, you're crazy. Go to a shrink. Mm-hmm. Here, we'll give you some other, which I never took. So, yeah, it was a long road.
Speaking about looking sick and just the whole physical appearance thing, another thing that I found interesting in your material here, the issues of the body branding, your workshop, getting comfortable with the skin you're in. Is that something that you still do?
Oh, yeah. I started doing it about a year and a half ago.
Oh, really? Okay. Mm-hmm. So please describe that, because that is, if ever there was something that is needed in this town, it's something like that.
Well, the book is about lessons, which is, I only throw myself under the bus, Judy, so not to worry. It's all good. I say at the beginning of the book that all the Waltons, people say, why have none of the Waltons ever written a book? And it's because we all decided a long time ago that if anybody did and told all of our stories, that the rest of us would get together and kill them. So I only tell my story. But part of it is about that body image confusion and about being perfect and looking pretty right. or whatever that means. And then trying to keep up that image in Hollywood. And so now I do public speaking and I tour around and I have this body branding. And it's really about, it came about through my own experiences of coming out the other side right. and having not robbed a convenience store like so many of our patrons.
Okay. I'm so glad that was someone else because here in the studio she just gestured to Judy and it was like, I don't remember.
No convenience stores. I have no record.
I don't remember.
She's not, no, honestly, she's not talking about me.
A lot of us don't come out.
We've heard all
side.
The stories. Yeah. Yeah.
They're all in the news. They're all in the news now.
Child stars have had problems.
Exactly. Yeah. But from that, I developed this body branding workshop and I work with women and young girls, and men too, and young boys at times. But it's really about finding what your value is and what you have to offer other than what you look like or how you vote and judge on other people and what they look like and how those things can really get in your way.
And you're starting to see it creep back a little in terms of the performers that you see on these shows. They're starting to get back to having... Like one of the things about 70s and early 80s television mm-hmm. was that the people looked like people. Mm-hmm. If you look at, I used to think about, aside from Travolta, everyone on Welcome Back, Kotter, I could have gone to high school with,
right.
just as an example. And the Waltons family was the same way. The Waltons family was real people. Mm-hmm. And, that for years then, it was just like, unless you walked off of a Pepsodent commercial, you were not on television. And now you're starting to see, especially shows, our friend Jen Ray is recurring on the show The Middle, and you the one with the woman who played Ray Romano's wife, Everybody Loves Raymond, for years.
Yes.
I don't remember her name right now. It's not coming to me. But you're starting to see, and you saw that a little bit in Malcolm in the Middle, you saw young actors that were allowed to just be young actors and mm-hmm. didn't have to be perfectly chiseled out of marble. So I applaud you for that, because I think that's a great thing to have, and I hope that... We can promote that for you.
Well, I think it's huge too in today's society with young people because they get so many mixed messages from the media and
because
from,
the reality drag. That's
yes,
it.
All of it. And from technology they get it.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
they're living
it.
On.
I have three teenage daughters, so part of my writing the book is so no one ever feels as confused and as frightened as I did growing up. Wow. You know, and especially having teenagers who look at these body images and they look at these women and say, oh, you know, at one point my daughter didn't want to ever not be a size zero. I thought, no, there was no size zero when we were growing up, right?
I'd like to ask both of you a question, actually, and with independent answers. Were you, when you were children and you were doing the show, were you coming from happy homes? Were your relationship with your own families as happy as what we were seeing on television with the Waltons?
Well, that's an unfair comparison, because nothing was the Waltons.
Well, be that as it may, but... you know, I ask that because if it's not, then you're kind of looking to one another in an environment like that. Where
I'll start. My parents were divorced when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
I had a brother and sister. So grew up in L.A. just like Mary did. So my family life had no relationship to the Waltons, although I'm very close with my brother and sister.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents, you know, both still lived in L.A. I can't say that I ever had a really tight, close relationship with my parents the way, you know, I did
mm-hmm.
with, you know, as Mary Ellen with the parents on
right.
that show. So, and the amount of time that we spent with each other, our TV family, was far more than I spent with my own family. So, to a great extent, growing up, it was more, they were more of a family to me than my
mm-hmm.
own was. Not that we're estranged or anything, but
right.
just, you know, it was,
right.
I related to them more because we shared more.
Now, how old were you when the show started?
13.
You were 13. Okay.
Yeah.
So and you, Mary?
Yeah. And I feel the same way. I mean, it's very, very, it's very true. I had a very close-knit Irish Catholic family here in the Valley. And, you know, we were kind of taken away from that family. I got to know my own family after the show was over
mm-hmm.
because we spent more time with each other than we did. But I think that the reason that we turned out okay is because we had each other. You know, we were the kids, and we had each other to be there for each other and to bounce off of each other. And there were also six of us.
Mm-hmm. Where
you count Richard, seven. But the Waltons weren't the perfect family either. I mean, we had
right.
trials and tribulations, but it is about family coming together and uniting, which, and it was on a time in America when there was a lot of upheaval and discord, which is very similar to how it is in America right now, which is why I think a lot of people are watching the show again on INSP every day, and
mm.
now it's on the Hallmark Channel. But I think it's, you know, family coming together and living under the same roof, which people are doing now as well. But we were all, you know, we really had each other. We still do. We have each other's
backs.
Well,
yeah, and we weren't as the Waltons. I mean, us as real people, you know, we were not like the Waltons even together, although we were very close. Our personal relationships were not those characters that the public saw on
right.
on TV either. So there's sort of three pieces to that equation,
yeah.
and, you know, we're sort of...
We're much more naughty.
There also had to be a lot of camaraderie born of the fact that all of you being very young, it was probably fairly egoless because none of you had really done...
No, we all got shot down equally by the powers that be. we had to rely on each other to get through that.
It's true.
Yeah.
It
was
true.
Not a lot of ego stroking around there.
And for Mary, the Waltons, the job being on the Waltons television series came from her very first audition.
It was your first audition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Say that.
How
yeah.
many people can say that?
Not very many. I mean, it was a wild ride for the first audition.
I must ask you something, too. I must ask you this before we're through with the show this afternoon. It says here that you've worked with many, many people, including Edgar Bergen, Patricia Neal, and Rosemary Clooney.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about that? How did Rosemary interface with you?
Well, Rosemary, I did a movie with her ex-husband and sons
mm-hmm.
and was working on a movie with them and met her nephew, George, who
yes.
gave me a lovely, beautiful quote for the book.
And I saw that.
Yeah.
I saw that.
Can I share that quote, man?
Yeah,
I'll share that. This is from George Clooney. This Mary is a whole lot more than Erin on the Waltons. This book shows how she's handled all the highs and lows with grace. I want a George Clooney quote.
I know, damn it. We all need one.
Oh, there's some fun stories about him in the book. So.
Oh, really?
He knows. I sent them to him.
Rags so George Clooney can get a preview copy. But
there's nothing racy about Judy in the book.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's right. You haven't seen the book
yet. I have not led a racy life, so there's nothing
that's
to
right.
write about.
Judy's home baking cookies and sewing socks for her son.
God, I sound
bored. Why is she singing? No, While jumping horses.
No,
all at the same time, which is...
Me and Cinderella. She taught me some great lessons about the difference between who Mary was and who Aaron was. And she taught me one night, is a story in the book, to come home and take off the singer and hang her up in the closet. And it was the first time where I actually started to kind of find myself, because I realized that I didn't have to be Aaron. I always would be, but that there was also a Mary. And then I just had to figure out who Mary was.
Well, that's fascinating, and I can't wait to read that, because I had a relationship with her for almost all of my life. And she was my mentor in my lifetime, who taught me everything about music, everything that I know today about music.
Yeah. And you never met me over there at the house?
No. No, I didn't.
She gave you your first job in the music business, right?
She did, yeah. As far as a road manager for a couple of years as well.
Wow.
So I was hanging out at the house all the time. And Gail, you know, mm-hmm. her half sister, mm-hmm. Gail. And with Miguel and Rafi and Monsita and Michael Feinstein next door.
I was there. You just did not notice
wow.
me. Wow. Memorable, you see.
Well, that's what a wonderful thing for a person to say to any performer, but how much more powerful it is to share with a young performer at that time, to really say, mm-hmm. no, that's not your identity. Hang that up in the closet and just, you know, that's very touching.
Do you remember Bernadette Withers?
Mm-mm.
Bernadette Withers, she was from the John Forsythe show. She played Ginger, the next door neighbor. Maybe that was a little bit, that was maybe a little bit before the Waltons, I think.
Yeah.
She was always over there, too. We were, was a laugh a minute over there, and Rosemary was... the most wonderful person
she was
in the world.
I'm proud to be able to have called her mama.
Yes, yeah, indeed. And certainly went on to have a greater, I think, in my opinion, a greater career toward the end of her life than she even had at the beginning of her life, because she had finally found herself, too. So
yeah.
How awesome is that? All right, ladies, we have to do our initiation.
Yes, call. But before we do, I want to put this out there again. Yes, because we make jokes about it, but it really sounds like a fascinating read. It is Lessons from the Mountain, What I Learned from Aaron Walton, and that is available through Kensington Publishers on March 29th, and I'm sure that it will be, in all the usual places, Amazon and whatnot.
Uh-huh. And also MaryMcDonough.com for more information.
MaryMcDonough.com. Once again, an incredibly difficult website to remember. MaryMcDonough.com and JudyNorton.com. Michael, you were saying, we have 4 minutes to share. We always ask our guests to share their either most embarrassing or funniest or on stage or in front of camera mishap, whatever it might be. Do either of you have one to share?
I can start. The one that came to mind for me was actually on stage when I was young. I worked with a repertory company when I was a child, and I was probably about 11 at the time. And in this particular show, I was in the show. It was an original play, and I played like a neighbor or something like that. But I was also pulling double duty as the prop person. And so there was a blackout where I was supposed to go out and clear the things that had been on this table, like a plate and some silverware and stuff. So I went out in the pitch black, and I dropped a piece of silverware on the floor, and I mean at 11 I was like, oh my goodness, I can't, so I'm like down on my hands and knees searching in the pitch black, crawling around trying to find this piece of silverware, and the lights come on because they figure I must have had time to clear by now, yeah. And there I am on my hands and knees, and I literally just crawled off stage. I thought I was going to be fired for the whole thing.
Yeah, the big question, though, did you manage to find, when the lights came up, did you at least grab the silverware?
I don't even remember. I was so horrified. I froze, and then I was like, I couldn't think of a single graceful way to, I was a character in the show. I could have just stood up and,
right.
But I couldn't think. It was a complete blank.
If I crawl off stage, I won't be as
exactly.
noticeable as
they
I stand up.
I'll do it real fast.
Really here.
Mary's going to say, well, I'll tell you exactly. Mary's like, I did a show and someone left a fork on stage.
And I stepped on it.
Yeah.
And you had complaints from the management. Like, why is there people crawling around? Some young girl on her hands and knees. No, in a short one, I was doing Foxfire at the Old Globe in San Diego, and I was supposed to leave and then come back about 5 lines later and say something and then say one line and leave again. And when you do a matinee and an evening, you think, oh, I already did that. So I walked off stage and I never came back on.
What? Who ended up delivering the line? Just someone else?
It was one line, so they just skipped over it. Lovely Don Sparks. He was great. He covered for everybody in that show.
I tell you, that is so true, though. The matinee show and the evening show, especially like Mike was saying, this one-man show that I did, when you're talking for an hour and a half, and then you've said everything the earlier part of the day, and then you come back, then you just like, and when things go out of your head, when you have that much text in your head, you forget how to tie your shoes. You forget everything you ever knew. It's not like the next line. It's just like, you're just up there like, could someone please feed me? Because I forgot how to feed myself.
Yeah.
You forget everything because your mind is so cluttered. At least mine was.
Yeah, sure. No, it happens. We've had so many people. John Lloyd Young, you know who John is? He created the role of Frankie Valli on Broadway in Jersey Boys. And he said one night after doing it for, I think he did the show for 2 years. Yeah. He literally just couldn't remember the next scene as it was coming, you know, to him. And because he was thinking about what he was going to have for dinner after the show and laundry he had to do the next day. And those things were going through his mind.
And the flop sweat, just the instant.
Well, and when it's you, it's worse. I did a play here in the Valley for a long time, and I was with a young girl who had worked with Tyne Daly, who said, honey, go to theater. So this was the first show she'd ever done. She went up every night, and I could tell her eyes went wide, and then they rolled into the back of her head.
Oh, my God.
And if it's not you, it's easier because you can jump in and say, oh, remember the time, start throwing their lines at them.
Right.
But every night I could see her go.
Oh, that's chilling.
Wow.
Okay.
Yes.
Michael, I'm going to share, first of all, thank our two lovely guests for joining us
today. Absolutely, ladies. Thank you.
Tease who we have next week. But before we do, two more little plugs. It's judynorton.com and marymcdonough.com.
Yes, indeed.
We look forward to welcoming next week's guest, the beautiful Michelle Clooney, best known for her co-starring role on Showtime's hit TV series Queer as Folk. We had another Queer as Folkie on. We had Scott Lowell on
a couple
weeks ago, who is currently treading the boards, not Scott, but Michelle, currently treading the boards in the Mercy Seat inside at the Ford, in the Mercy Seat is the name of the production,
yes.
Inside at the Ford Theater in the Hollywood Hills.
And Mackenzie Astin, actor and son of Academy Award winner Patty Duke and stage, film, and TV star John Astin. Mackenzie is currently co-starring in the political and emotionally charged play Caught on stage now at Hollywood's Zephyr Theater.
And also on our website, please, please remember to click the links that will help donate to the humanitarian efforts in Japan right now. We have three up there, all well worth it. Redcross.org, worldvision.org/helpjapan, and disasterfunding.org. Please send all you can. Let's do all we can for those people who
Absolutely.
Are experiencing that horrible event there.
Ladies, thank you. What a pleasure to have
you
in studio.
Thank you.
So great to have you here, and we will see you all next week.
We'll see you on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.